talking about race and racism is uncomfortable for a lot of people. It can be hard to know where to start and what to say. Our next guest wants to help guide us through the process and says it's really important to have these conversations about race to hopefully make the world a better place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you talk about race with your friends or family members? Did the conversation come up over Thanksgiving, or do you avoid that kind of conversation, especially at a place like the Thanksgiving table? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Celeste Headley is a journalist with lots of years in public radio, by the way, author of the new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. Celeste, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, one of the most common approaches to talking about race, I think, is not talking about it. What are some of the reasons people feel uncomfortable even bringing up the topic?
I think the number one thing is a fear. And it's either fear of getting into an argument or fear of making a mistake. I can allay the first one really quickly, which is that very few people with people they know well, like a family member, a friend, or a coworker, it's unlikely you're going to get into an argument. Most people are conflict averse in that way. So we don't find a lot of, through, you know, scientific surveys and things, we don't find a lot of evidence that it's likely you'll get into an argument with somebody that you know. That's not a Twitter argument. That's, you know, a family member.
Well, and there's another kind of conversation we might often have in our culture about race. I disagree with you, and then we yell at each other about it. How
yeah.
unproductive is that?
I mean, it's completely unproductive. I zero production. It's actually counterproductive. The reason being that if somebody's mind is going to change about something linked to their identity, like race or deeply held beliefs, it's going to happen over time, and it's going to happen incrementally, which means that in order to make progress, what's important is not necessarily just the conversation you're having then, but the future conversations, having more conversations, multiple conversations. So when you start screaming at each other, what you're really doing is blocking progress by making it less likely that that person will be open to another conversation in the future. So it's not just not productive, it's counterproductive.
We're talking to Celeste Headley about her new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or maybe your questions, the advice you want to get from our guest. That's 800-642-1234. All that said, Celeste, you make a big point of your book is that it's really important for people who disagree, who have different perspectives on race, to talk to each other. Why, before we get into the how, can you tell us why that is so important?
You know, when you're speaking with people who agree with you, all you're doing is entrenching the beliefs you already have and the opinions you already have. And that's not helping anything change. That's how we got where we are right now, is by each side only speaking to people who basically believe the same thing and just getting more and more entrenched in their beliefs. It also creates this idea, this false sense that most people agree with you. Right? If all the people you talk to agree with you, it gives you this idea that the broader world holds the same opinions that you do. And that leads to polarization. It also means that we don't have the skills that we need in order to disagree anymore. I mean, it takes real skills and practice to learn how to have a conversation with someone who disagrees with you without arguing. And so when you don't do that, when you don't talk to people who disagree, those skills start eroding. And again, you see this around us, is that we're not good at having those conversations anymore, and so we don't have them.
One practical suggestion you give in the book is to find common ground with that person, which sounds like kind of a fuzzy topic, but I love, you give a really specific example. You met someone from a very different perspective than your own, and as I recall, you bet a dollar. Can you tell us what that bet was and why you made it?
Yeah, this is somebody I met while I was traveling, and I happened to be traveling to Arkansas, and it was very clear that we were not going to agree on a lot. And so finally, I just said, hey, I don't think we're going to agree on anything, but I bet you a dollar I can find something we agree on. And it took, I think it took me a couple tries. It was, I think what the first thing we found in common was that we both thought autumn was the best season of the year and that, you know, dogs are better than people, but it's at least something where you can say, okay, here's some safe ground. Let's start talking from this area and treating one another like human beings. And then eventually the conversation can evolve. There has to be some trust and some sense of shared humanity.
And that reminds me of another point you make. In addition to finding that common ground, talking to people not as a representative of a category, but as an individual, and presenting yourself in that same way. Can you talk about how to do that?
Yeah, you know, our political parties and the political machines in this country try to make us think that if you're a Democrat, this is what you believe. Boom, 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 boom. You agree with the party line. It's just ridiculous. Voting for one particular candidate doesn't mean you like every Democrat or every Republican. It also doesn't mean you like everything that person does, right? I mean, most of the country is relatively centrist, with here and there an opinion that veers off in another direction. So we have to get out of this habit of thinking that political party tells us everything about a person. You know, there was research done that showed that at this point in our history, we are more likely to make assumptions about somebody else based on their political party than their race. And in a country where race and racism are so entrenched and ever-present, that's pretty shocking.
I want to point toward a couple different objections that people might have to having conversations about race with people they disagree with in the first place. And one thing you see kind of in the public sector, largely from, I think, white people, is I'm worried that people are going to think I'm racist or call me racist in this conversation. How do you try to overcome that objection, that concern?
So the first thing is, I want everyone to stop thinking of racist as the worst thing that can be said about you. And the reason that it is not the worst thing is that, you know, spoiler alert, yeah, you're racist. If racism means that you make assumptions about people based on their perceived race, then yes, you do that. I do that. We all do that. That is a basic bias that human beings have. And so, number one, it's not something to be afraid of. It's just true. The second thing is I try to encourage people in much the same way that historian Ibram Kendi and Isabel Wilkinson have suggested, in just not, don't feel the need to call somebody that. The word has just kind of been sapped of all its meaning and power at this point because it's so overused, it's so much used in the wrong context, it's so misunderstood that it just doesn't mean, its meaning is determined by whomever is either saying it or hearing it. So there's, you know, saying to someone, you're a racist, isn't necessarily the best or most productive thing you can do.
And then I've heard objections from black people who might say, why do I want to enter into a conversation with a person who thinks I'm inferior to them? What would you talk to them about that that concern?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why a person of color wouldn't want to enter this conversation, and that is one of them. Mm-hmm. And certainly if someone is saying things to you that demean you, that belittle you, or in any way, shape, or form make you feel that you are less than human, walk away. Don't continue that conversation. It's not the most common conversation you're going to have about race, because the most common conversation about racism that most of us will have is about casual racism and unconscious bias rather than hostile and overt racism. But yeah, if you're in that kind of conversation, I don't suggest that you continue. A conversation requires mutual respect. Doesn't mean you have to like the person, but you have to respect them. And if you don't have that, then there's no point.
Let me take you to maybe something somebody encountered over the weekend. You're at the Thanksgiving table or whatever the holiday table is next time around, and somebody makes a comment that doesn't sit right, that does seem like it's going into that racist territory. How do you approach that?
So the first thing I would say is please approach it. Like I said, racism, if we're going to confront it in other people, it's going to happen incrementally, and it's going to happen over time. So even if all you can stand is a few minutes when they say that racist comment, or that microaggression, if all you can bear to do is say, that's inappropriate, I see it differently, I prefer you not say that thing, and here's why. If that's all you can bear to do, I'd ask that you do it. First of all, the more that people do that, the less likely it is that people will feel those kind of comments are socially acceptable. So it makes it less likely they will make them again. Believe me, it does. But also, it's important that we never allow those kind of comments to stand. We can't allow that to be the social norm. I mean, there's really good evidence, at least in the sexist variety, that we know that if somebody makes a sexist joke and nobody objects, the chances that someone else will make a similar type of joke go up, and they go up by a lot. So we need to make sure that every single time somebody makes a comment like that, it is confronted. Even briefly, even 90 seconds, just make sure you confront it.
And then how?
So I often tell people to use the STAR system, which is stop, tell, assist, restore. So essentially, stop just means literally what it says. Interrupt what they're saying. Try to interrupt them so quickly that you don't let them get to the end of the sentence. And you don't have to say anything brilliant. You just go, wait, what? Or what did you say? Or whoa, whatever it is that you choose, interrupt it. Then you're going to tell them. And all you're doing is saying, I don't agree with that. Rather than saying they're wrong, you're basically saying, I don't think you're right. It's a small distinction, but it's important. Like, I don't see things that way. I see that as inappropriate. Then you're going to assist them by explaining why you have a different perspective. And in this particular case, I need you to own it for yourself. Don't say, would you say that if black people were here? Don't say that's offensive to Asian American people. Own it for yourself. Say, I don't like hearing that kind of thing. It bothers me to hear you say things like that for yourself. And then finally, restore, which is you're going to restore the humanity. And this goes back to trying to make it more likely that they'll be willing to have this conversation again. You're essentially going to say, listen, I know you to be someone who wants to be fair-minded and inclusive, and this doesn't match with the kind of person that I know you are. Something like that.
We're getting advice on how to have productive conversations about race and racism. Celeste Headlee is with us, author of the new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble with heavy, difficult conversations? What parts are difficult for you? Do you have a success story to share maybe in having these kind of conversations? Or would you like some advice from our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Celeste Headlee. She wrote a new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. John joins us now in Neenah. John, hello.
Hello, sir.
What did you want to bring up, John?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I had a thought about racism, and my comment is a definition I have of a racist. Is that there's someone who I believe is not comfortable in their own skin.
Mm-hmm. And that you think that's the motivation, John, in some ways for racism?
Well, we each share the same consciousness, but we interpret it differently. And racism implies that we're invading someone else's space in the sense that we share all the same space. Metaphorically speaking.
I got so. John, thanks for the call. What do you think, Celeste, about, I guess, the motivations, the underlying reasons that we might behave in racist ways?
So that is something I don't get into because I'm not qualified to talk about people's motivations.
Sure.
I mean, I will say this. Racism is everywhere. It's when we say it's systemic, it means it's embedded in not just our government, not just our schools, but in our media, in our books, our movies. And so it is no surprise that so many people harbor racist beliefs. Of course they do. It's the air we're breathing.
Thanks for the call, John, at 800-642-1234. Celeste, we talked just a few moments ago about what to do if someone else makes a comment that you find troublesome. You also write about, what if it's me? And you point out cases you admit in your own life, you've done it a couple times. What happens if we're the person who's said something that isn't quite right about race?
Yeah, I've done it a lot more than a couple times. And I'm about as diverse as a person can get, you know. The thing is that even somebody like me, who's Black and Jewish and a very small part Native American, all the other things, there's plenty of cultures I'm neither a member of nor understand. And so, of course, I'm going to make a mistake. I think the first line of that chapter is, there are two types of people, those who have said the wrong thing about race and those who will. So we need to foster a culture of correction in which it's okay. It's not just okay when somebody makes a mistake. We expect it. I'm not talking about overt hostile racism. That I don't really have much time for. But I'm talking about the microaggressions, the slip-ups, that we can be patient with. We don't let them go. We confront them, but we don't imply in any way that having made that mistake makes that person racist and irredeemable and awful.
Talking to Celeste Headlee about her new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. Celeste, I know in past books you've written about having difficult conversations about any topic, including race. And you mentioned earlier that a lot of us don't have the tools to have these kind of conversations. What can we do to, I guess, train up before we have to have a tough conversation about race with someone?
Obviously, you know, buy the book. But the point of the book is that I don't want you to spend too much time preparing. I mean, do your homework, of course. Don't use if you're a white person, don't use a person of color as your Google search. But go out and have the conversation and be honest about it. Go to your friend who is Hindu and say, look, I got to be honest with you. I don't know very much. I read this about your faith. Is it okay if I ask some questions? Is it okay if you tell me a little bit more? Tell me about this particular festival. Tell me about the food you eat. What was the weather like in the place where you grew up, et cetera, et cetera. Go approach these conversations with an honest sense of curiosity, and you will be okay.
And you give advice on how to ask a question, which I love as somebody who asks questions for a living. What separates a bad question in this kind of context from a good question?
Oh, bad questions are everywhere. bad questions are, number one, they could be in bad faith. They could be rhetorical, that you're using your question to either shame the other person or lead them to a particular point of view, right? Where were you last night? Why would you think that's okay? Right? Those are not good faith questions. But a good question is one that is open-ended. It's usually brief, and it usually has to be answered with something more than just a yes or no, right? You're inviting the other person to respond in whatever way they like, out of curiosity. That's a good question.
These issues have obviously been a part of American culture since before there was a United States. Do you see progress? Are we getting better at talking about race?
I have no idea. I mean, I can give you my experience based on the past 40 years, and I don't think we've improved all that much. I think we've gotten marginally better. You know, when I was a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't considered polite to talk about race in so, you know, polite company. That's not true anymore for the most part, and that's progress. But it's, you know, we don't have the data. I mean, what is a good conversation about race and how do we track it? I mean, I think that the way we know that we're not having good conversations about race is that we're not really making progress. If we were having truly impactful and productive conversations about race, we would be making more progress.
Can you give us a minute or so of encouragement for people listening to overcome their hesitation about talking about race and give it a shot?
Yeah. So here's the first thing is that we've tried not talking about it, and that's how we're here, right? Like, that clearly hasn't worked. Can we all just be honest about that? The other one is that although the stakes are super high when it comes to fighting systemic racism, the stakes are low for your conversation. You're not going to conquer systemic racism in your 5-minute chat with your neighbor. All you have to do is create some kind of empathic connection. That's it. And that empathic connection can be over an issue of race. It could be over, you know, your favorite kind of flower. But as long as we, with those we disagree especially, as long as we can keep these conversations going that prevent us from seeing those who disagree as other and as somewhat less than human or as enemies, that's still progress. So just give it a go. 90 seconds, 3 minutes, that's all it has to be.
Celeste, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Celeste Headlee is a journalist, speaker, and author of a number of books, including her latest, the one we've been talking about. It's called Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. Talk to Celeste about having conversations with people in your life about issues related to race and racism.